Reading can be taken from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 25, beginning to read at verse 31. This is page 995 of the Church Bibles. When the Son of Man comes into his glory, and all the angels with him, he will sit on his throne in heavenly glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed in my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did you see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you as a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" The king will reply, "I tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me." Then he will say to those on his left, "Depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me." They also will answer, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger, or needed clothes or sick or in prison, and did not help you?" He will reply, "I tell you the truth. Whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me." Then they will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life.
Ben, thank you and welcome.
Thank you. Well, thank you for inviting me. I will say some things about Tear Fund, and I will forgive you if you've heard them many times before and your attention wanders for those bits. I've come from Staines today. I live there with my three young children, and I came down to live there to work for Tear Fund. And I should thank Glyn for acting on the vision that God gave him 40 years ago, perhaps 41 now, because it means that I'm doing what I always wanted to do in my evenings. I get to do all day. I'm absolutely loving working for Tear Fund. I've been there for the last 4 years, and it just gets better. There's two other things I should say to reassure you before I start, and one is that Tear Fund does not work in Mexico, and neither me nor my staff have been there recently. So I'm safe to approach. And there's another reason I'm safe to approach, which is that I thought, coming to speak about climate change, I would make sure I got here by train and by bike, which I did. But I cycled slowly and sedately, and I don't smell too awful. So, when I stick around afterwards, do feel free to come up and ask me any questions. Okay. I wanted to say a little bit about Tear Fund. So, Tear Fund is a Christian relief and development agency. We work in, I think, 60 countries currently around the world. And we do long-term development work. We work through churches. We work through Christian groups. We also do emergency work at times of disaster. Again, we work through churches on the ground. In major disasters, we go operational and pay staff and provide services directly ourselves as well. And there's a huge virtue in the same agency doing both of those things, because it means that we know a lot about preparing communities for disaster. It's very easy. People have a great impulse to give generously at times of disaster. It's simple. You can see something terrible that's happened and you want to help. It's much harder to get people to give money to help prepare for disaster, to help communities where disasters are likely get ready so the impact is less when they do come. But actually, that's extremely good value for money, and we are well placed to do both of those jobs. Tear Fund has a vision, which is that over the next 10 years, we want to lift 50 million people out of physical and material, out of physical and spiritual poverty, which is a lot of people. And we want to do that through a network of 100,000 local churches, which is a lot of churches. And it's a vision of equality, really. It's about the local church, wherever it is, having a role. When you put us together, we are powerful. And so local churches here in London, local churches in Cambodia, local churches in Zambia, each of us have a role to play. Different roles, but one vision. And that vision leads us directly to climate change. And we realised this nearly 10 years ago. And since then, we've been working on climate change as a major priority. And the first thing I want to say to you, and if you remember nothing else that I say, remember this, is that climate change is real, and it's happening now. It's happening now. It's not something that might happen if we don't watch out. It's really happening now. It's too late to stop it, but it's not too late to stop it getting much worse. And we came to work on climate change not through the science, though that is important, but through the experience of poor communities on the ground, the poor communities that the churches we work with are serving. We listened to those churches. We noticed they were telling us a new thing. And I've heard all of these things again and again from farmers particularly and people who depend directly on the environment for their living, people who live from fishing, people who live pastoralists, herders and farmers. In country after country across different continents, they say very similar things. They say there are more droughts than there used to be. They say that when it does rain, the rain is often unreliable. It doesn't come when it used to. If they live somewhere where rains were predictable, now they are less predictable. And this is a terrible problem if you're a farmer. So do you plant your crop when you expect the rains to come and gamble that they will? Or do you wait till the rains start and then plant and risk them stopping again? It makes life much harder for people, many of whom found life hard enough already. Deserts are expanding in many parts of the world. Sea levels are rising. There are more floods. There are more extreme weather, bigger storms. There is less drinking water. Many people around the world rely on glaciers for their drinking water. Glaciers melt. The rivers are swelled. There is drinking water. As the glaciers melt, we can see a time when that water will no longer be available. And of course, there are changes to ecosystems on which people depend for a living, particularly if you're a hunter or a fisher. Most of these people we hear this from are not people who've ever heard of climate change. They just know the weather is funny. It's not like it was a generation ago. And they know this is making life harder. And we hear this again and again. So climate change is a vast, impersonal thing. It's huge. It depends on an invisible gas that you can't see. But it's also very personal. It's about individual stories, and I'd like you to hear one of them now. This is the story of a man named Andrew Maglasi, who lives in a village called Fombe in Malawi. How do I have to do?
Thank you. One in three people in Malawi go hungry for at least 3 months each year. These same people are poorer than they were 20 years ago. Andrew is a farmer who has lost both his parents. He's 22 and works hard to feed 8 people in his extended family, including his wife Grace and daughter Tadala. Andrew loves the land of Malawi, but extreme weather and climate change are destroying his hope.
When I look back over the last 4 years, people used to harvest quite a lot and the food would last right up until the next harvest. But these days, because of droughts and floods, we never have enough harvest to last for the whole year. I have 2 acres of land and 8 people to feed from this. Nowadays, this is not enough to feed everyone.
Andrew is in an impossible situation. He needs the rain or his maize will shrivel before it's ready to be harvested. But now when the rains come, they bring floods. Floods that destroy his field and have left 12,000 tons of sand.
The climate has changed recently. The rains bring floods, which bring sand. When the water goes away, we are left with all this lying on top of our good soil. We have to go down 90 centimeters through sand, which takes half an hour. Before, it took 30 seconds to dig and plant. We have 2 acres, but we harvest as if it were one.
With the local church, Eagles has enabled farmers like Andrew to plant trees which protect the village from flooding. We also help them to plant crops that are drought-resistant, like cassava and sweet potatoes. These seedlings cost just £2 per family, and more are urgently needed.
Thanks. I should say, you can't ever prove that any individual event like that is caused by climate change. All you can say for sure is that climate change will cause an awful lot more events like that, and also that there's an irony in that the same place can be affected by more floods and more droughts in the same year at different times. We see that a lot. The other lesson from that clip is that there's hope. And this is a clip taken from a presentation I've been doing called Hope for Planet Earth, which would take 2 hours and I'm not going to give you tonight. But there is hope. So there, Eagles is the name of a collection of local churches that Tear Fund supports. They are providing drought-resistant crops and ideas for using them. They're providing ways to reduce the flooding in future. There are things that can be done. So, this takes us to our passage, that story of the sheep and the goats, a well-known one. It's very well-known, but each time I look at it, I'm completely taken aback again by how strong it is, by how strongly Jesus identifies with poor people, with people who are hungry and thirsty and sick and lonely. I shouldn't be surprised, because he chose to become a person for a while, and because I know that he loves us, and because I know that he loves us practically, here and now, in our bodies, physically. And yet I am, each time I look, I'm taken aback by how strongly he responds. So if we fail to feed hungry people, he does not just say, I'm disappointed in you, he actually says, I will send you away. I'm not going to preach on hell tonight, and I wouldn't base a full-on doctrine of hell just on one passage. But I note how strong it is. And climate change is making people hungry. It's making people thirsty. It's also preventing people who get sick recovering, because for poor communities, people with no reserves, sickness is expensive. And if you have less than you used to, the chances of your being able to afford medicine, access to clinics, lots of travel, time away from the fields are less, and your chances of recovering are reduced. And similarly, many people who would have learnt to read and write will not if their families become poorer, because their labour will be needed on the land and because their parents will not be able to afford to send them to school, to pay school fees, to buy books, to buy pencils, to buy school uniforms. So, from this passage, there's one clear reason why God cares about climate change and wants us to. Just that compassionate, simple response to a need that we can now see. But there's another one, because God is not just a God of compassion who loves people. God is a God of justice who loves justice. And I'm going to take it for granted you think that already. And if you want me to come back and prove it, you'll have to invite me back to do that another time, or come and talk to me later. But I believe our God is a God of justice. And climate change is an issue that's incredibly unfair, because it's not the people who cause climate change who are feeling the brunt of it. The people who are feeling the brunt of it did the least to cause it. And here's a number to bring that home to you. So, people like Andrew in Malawi, their carbon footprint is on average 0.1 tonnes of greenhouse gases a year. A Bangladeshi has double that, but it's still only 0.2 tonnes. And in the UK at the moment, the latest figures are that our average is 9.8 tonnes per year, massively more. But we're much better placed to weather the storms of climate change. We are much more likely to have insurance. We are much less likely to have no savings. It is much easier for us. Climate change will affect us too, but we're much less vulnerable to it. There's a historical thing as well in the UK. We invented industrialisation. We were the first. So we have a particular responsibility, it seems to me, to tackle it. But as well as compassion and justice, the other reason why climate change is on God's heart and should be on ours is stewardship. God loves his creation. Let me just flick through another extremely well-known passage, the first chapter of Genesis. And I'm just going to hop through a few verses and remind you how much God loves this place that he made. And God said, God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place and let dry ground appear. And it was so. God called the dry ground land and the gathered waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it according to their various kinds. And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. And skipping to verse 20, God said, let the water teem with living creatures and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living and moving thing with which the water teems according to their kinds and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creatures that move along the ground and wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. God saw that it was good. And another take, slightly less well-known passage from Colossians 1, verses 16 to 17. And it's talking about Jesus, and it says, for by him all things were created. We don't so often think of Jesus the Creator, but he was. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. All things were created by him and for him. This planet belongs to Jesus. He cares about it. We have a duty, I think, if we love him, to look after the thing that he loves, this earth and its creatures and even its plants and even things that I fail to see the appeal of. Like, I've heard it said that God must be very fond of beetles because there are so many different varieties. Personally, I think we could do without some of them. But God doesn't. God made them deliberately and put them here for a reason and takes delight in them. So it's incumbent on us to do the same, not just because people depend on the environment to survive, but because it is good, because it is pleasing to the God that we love and serve. So let's not trash it. Climate change, of course, is doing that. It's wiping out species, it's damaging ecosystems, it's damaging beautiful parts of nature, and the Arctic ice cap is particularly under threat at the moment. The science is changing quickly. We're realizing that in maybe 15 years, there may well be no ice at the polar ice cap in summer. A massive change, a beautiful part of the world that I'm not expecting to see personally. I may never get the chance to now. The science behind all this is not really debated anymore by scientists. There is a tiny handful of scientists who still don't think climate change is real and caused by people and the greenhouse gases we emit. But it's pretty clear. The vast majority of scientists agree. It is happening. The carbon dioxide, methane, and other gases we emit into the atmosphere are warming the Earth. And we can see this happening. And we can measure the impact. So there has been a 0.7 degree increase in temperature since the Industrial Revolution, which doesn't sound very much, but it's incredibly fast. It's faster than temperatures have changed any other time we can measure, going back thousands of years. And it's getting faster still at the moment. I'd like you to hear from a scientist now, a man called Sir John Horton, who is Tearfund's scientific advisor. He also used to head the Met Office, and he was the co-chair of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change Scientific Committee. So this is one of the greatest scientific endeavours there has ever been. Huge, thousands of scientists, every possible discipline connected to climate change, working together. And he chaired it. And in case that isn't enough to make you trust him, he's also married to a Tearcraft rep, which is another good qualification. I'd like you to hear from him now.
I'm John Horton. I'm a scientist and I'm a Christian. I've been involved with the climate change issue a long time now because I was chairing or co-chairing the scientific assessment for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which was the UN body that was doing it all. And so I've been very involved with climate change for a long time. Climate change is certainly happening. You can see it's happening. Everybody knows it's happening. the ice is melting much faster in the Arctic than we ever expected. Instead of being cleared in the summer by the end of the century, it's going to be clear by 2015 or so in the summer, and that's going to make a big difference to the climate. We're getting more rainfall in different places. We're getting drier regions. Droughts and floods are happening all over the world. We've seen floods happening in the UK. So climate change is actually really happening. The biggest impacts of climate change will be more, of course, the Earth will be warmer, so you get more heat waves. The hydrological cycle, that's the water cycle, will get more intense, which means more floods and more droughts. And also, the sea level will rise as the oceans warm and as ice melts as well. Just to mention those, we had an enormous heat wave in Europe in 2003. 20,000 people died in that year. Sea level rise, if you live in Bangladesh and you imagine a meter of sea level rise this century, then where are those people going to go? Because there are 10 million people below the 1 meter contour. And there are lots of other people, millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions around the world who will really be affected by all that sea level rise. And then we have more floods and more droughts. Now, they're the biggest disasters we know. They cause more deaths, more miseries, more economic loss than any other disasters. And more of them is very bad news for people in vulnerable parts of the world. So the poor in the world will really suffer because of the climate change. The governments of the world have to do a great deal to cut carbon emissions from the world. At the moment, they're going up by 3% a year. They've got a peak no later than 2015 and then start to go down very fast. So that they drop by, our government's agreed, to minus 80% by 2050. In order to do that, we have to stop emissions from coal-fired power stations, which means carbon capture and storage. We have to get renewable energies very much more in proportion around the world. That's wind power, that's solar cells, that's tidal power, that's burning biomaterials, biomass and so on, lots of possible renewable sources. And all of those things put together with, of course, becoming much more efficient in our use of energy. Put all those things together and you can begin to get the solution that's required. We drive cars, we fly an aeroplane sometimes, we heat our homes with gas or electricity. All of those generate carbon dioxide emissions. We have to become much more efficient in our use of energy. We have to turn lights off when they're not needed. We have to insulate our homes so that they use very little energy. We can buy green electricity from companies that produce it from renewable sources. We can stop driving our cars so much. We can drive them, make sure we have the most efficient car we can find in order to cut our emissions. We can also, the way we buy matters, actually, what we buy. We must buy things that aren't energy intensive. We must buy the very best appliances we can, which don't use too much energy. We can do all sorts of things to reduce our own carbon footprint, and we should be doing them all.
So one thing I wanted to pick up on that he said there is how soon we need to start reducing our emissions. At the moment, they're going up. We have about 6 or 7 years to turn it around and start the world's emissions reducing again. And if we don't do that, it is very likely that the temperature rise, on average, will be more than 2 degrees around the world since industrial times. Remember, we've already gone through a third of that. And temperatures have reached 0.7 degrees warming. If we reach more than 2 degrees, it is likely that it will run away out of control, that things like the Greenland ice sheet will melt, that things like the Soviet permafrost will thaw, releasing enormous amounts of methane into the atmosphere. And climate change will run away with us to a level we cannot manage. So, it's urgent, but there are things we can do. So I don't want you to despair, because there are still things we can do. I don't want you to feel guilty, because climate change was caused mostly by perfectly innocent things we had no reason to think were wrong. But we do need to change. I also don't want you to become an eco-Pharisee. It's easy to do. I'm fighting the urge. So there are 4 things we can do. One is poor communities can adapt, and Tearfund is doing its best to help them and help different church groups working on this share information, share ideas to do it better. We can change our lifestyles, and I have a booklet to help you do that. On the table at the back, it's called For Tomorrow Too. It looks like this. And in it are some of the dullest things Jesus will ever require of you. Things like information about lagging your loft. It's also one of the easiest things Jesus is ever going to ask you to do, isn't it? And it will save you money, and it is well worth doing. And I do think he wants you to do it, but I cannot promise you you're going to have a great, thrilling time doing it. It's just the right thing to do. And this book is full of tips to make doing the right thing easy. I've discovered an amazing initiative that you are blessed with here in this borough tonight. And if you have a look at the display behind you and pick up one of these, it's got some great further tips, things you can do and get help with. It's lovely. I shall pinch it and suggest it to other councils. And I think the church is well placed to set an example of changing our lifestyle. We shouldn't be consumerist. We should know our life is not based on what we buy. It should be easy for us to set a good example and be in the forefront of this. And the Church of England is doing that with its Shrinking the Footprint initiative, which I see you've done. Congratulations on that. Watch out for the next phase of it coming this autumn. Something else we can do is campaigning, which is my job, is to tell you how you can campaign, how you can change government's minds. And I've made it very easy for you by, in the back of this booklet, I may have given you one on the way in, or there's some on the table at the back with pens. Please tear off the little message to the Prime Minister and sign it. And if you can pledge any of the things on it, then do. And if you can't at the moment, please sign it anyway. They will all count. And if you'd like to sign up for things like this, little postcards that I can send you four times a year with prayer points and campaign actions, I'd love you to. I've got 20,000 people doing this at the moment, and I'd like more. I'd love you to join. And you don't have to post it. You can just give it to me. Campaigning does change things. And it particularly changes things when the church is involved doing it, because we're not the usual suspects, and because when we're doing it, it's backed up by prayer, which is the fourth thing I want you to do, is to pray for world leaders to have the courage to get us a deal on climate change at the end of this year at the talks in Copenhagen. It's not the last chance to get a deal. It's the best chance to get a global deal to tackle climate change that's fair, that's strong enough, that does what we need it to do. And that's the last thing I'd like you to do, is join me on a march in December. There's flyers for this at the back too. It's a big rally, it's a big coalition, the church and many other groups there. I'd love to be there to show that our God is a God of justice, our God is a God who loves people, our God is a God who cares for the planet that he made. And I can't think of a better way than having a massive church presence along many other groups giving this message to the government on the 5th of December. So I'd love to see some of you there. Thank you. I think I've talked too much to have any questions, but I'll linger at the back.